which I kind of like, really.
Yeah, I've heard you like that.
I do. Wait, what? Wait a minute. Did I just walk into something? All right. Hey, it's Sunday. Huh. See? It's
we not just Tuesday. Tripped you up.
Right. Messing with your head, man. Although it may be Tuesday where you live, depending on when you get to this.
I do believe we're going to post it on Tuesday, so it will be Tuesday for them.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
We're going to do time
so you'll,
travel.
You'll be able to get to post it. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to post it tonight.
I was going
to
get it all ready and then hit the button.
Oh, so
on
all
Tuesday,
you have to do.
It's, you know.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, so then it's Tuesday for you, but it's Sunday night for us. It's an evening show. It's on Taking Pictures, episode 228.
Yeah.
Sunday evening. Bill Wadman in New York. Jeffrey Sidoris in D.C. I've got my silk jammies on. I'm ready to do this.
I was going
to
say, do we have formal wear on since it's an evening recording?
No. I'm in jammies, man. Okay. That's all it is.
All right.
Yeah.
Smoking yeah. jacket? Ascot?
I wish. Oh, I wish. If only.
You look like a lion sadly. With your hair and all that.
That's true. Rawr.
That's good.
Hey, we are doing a big Q&A show today. Little thing on my feed. I subscribe to CJ Chilver's newsletter. And if you don't know CJ Chilver's, he's over at alesserphotographer.com. Great guy. We've talked before. And I've read his book. And he's a big Van Halen fan. And he posted this thing, The Biggest Lies You've Been Told About Photography. And he asked, actually, what are some of the biggest lies that you've been told about photography? And he posted some of the answers that he's gotten, which some of them are pretty cute. Yeah. Do good work and
cute.
People will come to you. Really? Sometimes yeah. That's true.
Well, that's the problem. A lot of these are sometimes it is true, right?
Right. You must shoot raw.
Well, yeah, that's just silly.
Yeah.
But you know, I shoot raw, so I guess
you have to specialize.
I guess I listen to that one
and only shoot in that genre.
Well, that some people say that that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
As a pro, well, see, he qualifies it because he says here, as a pro, that makes sense to specialize and have a target market. But to be told
yeah, maybe,
as an advanced amateur, you should settle down to one genre now is ridiculous. I agree with that.
How many people are out there? I specialize in and they've got like seven things.
Yeah. Well, those are people who are trying to play it both ways.
Right. So, you know, if you're interested in this,
I'll
check
put
it out.
In the show notes.
And, you know, maybe tag CJ with your own lies that you've been told about.
He's actually got a, he has a Van Halen encyclopedia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wrote like the definitive guide to Van Halen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, look at that. The Van Halen encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's serious.
All right, I bow.
And he's a super nice
to
guy.
His knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, super nice guy. Total sweetheart.
All right, excellent.
So, CJ Chilvers.
Nice plug. Good.
You want to just dive in?
I guess, yeah. We have, I don't know, what do we got here?
30-something
questions?
Yeah. Let's just dive in, see how far we get.
All right. Well,
or we're just going to go until we drop.
You want me to flip a coin? You want to call it in the air?
Right, sure.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, call it.
Tails.
Tails. All right. You want to start or you want me to start?
I will receive.
Okay. okay, we're starting.
That's a sports thing, right?
Yeah,
look at
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Ha! I don't
you're,
watch
you're
hockey.
You're gonna wait, home run what? That touchdown. Yeah, <That's>, exactly.
We're gonna go into.
You're gonna dribble
points.
That football.
That's right. That's
up
right.
Up the court.
all right.
Okay, Oscar.
I'm ready.
I'm Oscar, and a graphic designer. I got into photography during my studies when I took an extracurricular called quote analog photography end quote. I've shot and loved analog ever since. Also love the whole developing process. But I'm thinking about getting my first digital camera. Any tips and or tricks? Should I even be considering it?
Well, I would say, are there shortcomings with analog that leave you feeling as though you're missing out on shots, or is it too expensive? Is it look at why you want digital. I mean, yep. I know a lot of people going back to analog and sure. leaving digital behind. Yep. So I would look at what you think you're going to get from or bring to digital before making that decision. And if so, boy, that's a can of worms. I mean, there's price range. Do you want interchangeable lenses? Do you want something that's pocketable? Do you yep. want something that's, you know, point and shoot? Or do you want, you know, that's a big question.
Yeah, I think I'd add in the idea of getting a camera that is arguably an analog, as it were, you know, getting a camera that feels like the camera you like shooting in film, just to make the transition a little easier. I mean, if you go from some sort of all manual Minolta thing from 1978 to a brand new Sony mirrorless, you know, right. like that
that's
is such a jarring
culture
difference.
Shock. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. That you might be better off getting a Fuji thing, or, you know, something that's a little more dial-y and a little less menus. But
yeah, that's a big question, man.
I mean, it depends what you're trying to do. I mean, look, there are advantages to digital, and digital does look great nowadays, and you can do amazing things in software that is very much like the process of developing in the darkroom too, you know? I mean, a lot of people really enjoy the process of developing, for lack of a better word, raw files, you know, and coming up with a look with them and playing with sliders and sitting there messing with it for a long time. And
right. So and coming up with your own recipes for sure. for whatever look and feel you're trying to get to.
And a lot of times you can get pretty close to the look and feel you were getting in film. And, you know, there are also opportunities. It's, I mean, once you buy the camera, the cost of taking a lot of pictures goes down. So maybe you learn a little faster because it's more iterative. You can, you know, see what you're doing wrong or differently as you go. A lot of people like that. But certainly don't feel like you have to, I guess.
Right.
I mean, you're doing both, but you still do both.
I haven't shot film in a while.
Right.
But I am making plans to go back to film, especially, you know, in the new house.
Right.
So
you going to build a darkroom?
I am leaning towards that. Yes.
Yeah. Can you, I mean, how much, do people buy, they still make new enlargers, or do you just buy stuff used?
I don't know. I haven't looked in. I looked on eBay and I did find a listing for a new old stock still in the box, 23C XL2.
Okay.
Which could be really great. There's another listing for a complete turnkey 23C XL2 set with Graylab timers and tanks and reels and two sets of trays and
right.
easels
whole
and
kit.
You know, all of this stuff for, I think it was $400 or $500, which is not bad.
Isn't that nuts?
It's crazy.
That would cost you thousands.
Yes.
Ugh. I mean, it's like any of these little cameras. The fact that you can spend $1,000 and get a nice 1970s Leica M, you know?
Mm-hmm.
15, 20 years ago, you couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. As long as, you know, the other thing is, as long as the films that you use seem like they're going to keep going, you know, a lot of people are
right.
stuck on a particular look and then that disappears. And maybe then it's like, well, let me try something different. You know. Next one's yours. What do you got?
Thank you, Oscar. David. Oh gosh. SZ.
I'm glad I'm glad I got the first question.
Swedwick. SZW.
Wouldn't it be
UIK?
Wouldn't it be double E if it was Swedwick?
Maybe Swedwick. David, write in and tell us how to phonetically not butcher your name. Does doing the podcast impact your photography in terms of creativity or inspiration, for example? If so, any examples you can give us as to how it impacts each of you personally?
Isn't it funny how you and I sitting here talking about this for 4 years, I mean, we get a lot of emails from people saying how it inspires them and gets them back into it, or, you know, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But that ultimately, I guess it does affect you and I just as much, I guess, but it's just such a part of our lives that it's hard to necessarily point to a specific thing for me. you know?
Well, I mean, it's why I'm here. It's why I'm where I am. It's been, I've met new friends. You know, I mean, everything that's amazing that's happened to me in the last year is because of this show.
Right. Yeah. So not even, and then photography itself is a whole other.
Yeah. I mean, I've been inspired by the listeners. I've been inspired by people who send in Photographer of the Week suggestions.
Sure.
I've been inspired by meetups that we've done.
Yeah. I mean, or therapy sessions we end up having on the show.
That's right. That's right.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. This show's been one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Right.
I mean, this show has changed my life in so many different ways. And it's all because we decided to have a conversation 5 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Specifically impacting my photography or your photography. I mean, I guess the fact that we're shooting at all, we keep doing it every day. I mean, I think part of it's, you know, Photographer of the Week. Some people give us crap about the Photographer of the Week because they don't see what we're seeing necessarily, unless they're sitting at a computer when they're watching it. But I think that a lot of people come in and thank us for introducing them to a particular person. I think that stuff actually feeds on itself a little bit. And I know that, you know, you come up with stuff or I come up with stuff that the other one of us hadn't seen before and kind of makes us think a different way. I think that stuff is great too.
Yeah,
it's good. Marcus, what is your favorite camera strap and style of holding your camera while walking around? What do you use for your camera strap?
I use the one that Carlo Da Silva sent us.
Yeah. The nice leather straps from España.
What's it called? What is the...
You can look that up.
Da Silva.
On your old camera. Nikon back in the day, did you have one of the hip kind of straps?
I used to use an R strap.
Okay.
One of the sling straps.
Right.
And I liked it for a DSLR.
Okay.
A lot. And if I do go back to DSLR, I may go back to that. I just think it handles the weight a little bit better. What I do with my strap now is I like wrist straps, but I don't like the fact that they're not so flexible. And sometimes I just hang my camera off my shoulder if I'm just kind of walking along.
Right.
But when I'm shooting, I'll wrap the strap around my wrist a few times.
Sure.
So it sort of behaves like a wrist strap.
Yep.
Fernando, not Carlos.
Right.
I'm sorry. Fernando.
I had a company made out of old... What is the material they make seatbelts out of? You know, that crazy nylon strapping?
Oh, sure. Kind of like the strapping meshing kind of thing?
Yeah. A company who made sling-style straps out of that you just screw into the bottom, into the mounting point, right? Into the tripod mount. I personally don't like the sling straps because the camera ends up bouncing around too much as I walk. Like, it just sort of bounces off me. Like, it's just sitting there... pendulum. It drives me crazy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I personally use what is the company who makes it's like the old school style straps, just the normal. I don't use a fancy strap. I use a very old strap on my digital SLR. And most of the time I actually take it off because I don't have it on there unless I'm walking around with my camera, because it drives me crazy having it on there when I'm shooting inside. If I need to put my camera down, I put my camera down.
Nucas leather. Oh.
Oh, okay. That's what they're called?
Yeah, Nucas, NUCIS.
You found it.
Nucas. Yeah, nucasleather.com. They're terrific straps. They make half cases.
Here, put a link in the show notes so I can stick it up there.
Okay.
Give me the link. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The different how everybody makes these things. Photodiox and indigo calc.
Yeah.
Man, who do I use? Not Luma. Optec. That's what I use. I use old Optec ones.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Classic old school. I do, however, have the Nucas leather one on my Leica. So
I really like it as well. It's comfortable, it's flexible, the quality of leather is real good. And they're not super, super expensive. They're not like, what's the something and something?
There's a fancy brand called something and something.
And they're nice straps, but they're very, very expensive.
Yeah. You can fetishize a lot on straps. I don't like the hanging ones because they bounce around too much. There's your answer. Optech and Jeffrey uses the leather one on his Fuji.
Mike Waller.
Yep.
This is a four-parter.
Okay. Give me number one.
All right, number one. How often do you revise or modify your website or websites to add new work or to eliminate older work you no longer feel is your best?
I do this
a lot more than I do.
Well, I add stuff to my blog a lot, and then I will occasionally add some of those to different sections of my site. And culling down, I don't know, a couple times a year, three times a year, four times a year. Not more than every few months. I mean, when I have time, you know, sort of one of those things where it's like, I have nothing else going on today. I might as well, since I'm not getting any work today, why don't I find a way to improve my website so that I get more work? You know, these sort of mind games you play with yourself. Yeah.
All right, part two. Do you have any thoughts on optimal size, number of galleries, or the size of individual galleries?
Is he saying size of the images that you upload?
It looks like pixel size maybe for the first one. Yeah.
Okay. I think somebody else had another question that's similar, but we can do it here. I uploaded around 2,000 pixels on the long end.
I'm at 15 or 1,800.
Right. So I want things to look good on Retina screens.
Right.
So I'm willing to go relatively big. And if somebody steals my stuff and uses it, I'll write them and sue them. You know, it's not like somebody's going to make a print of my stuff and start putting it on stuff. I mean, I guess they could, but if they do, you know, number of galleries, I don't know. I have a couple like main ones and then five or six just sort of personal project galleries. You know, when we were looking at a lot of the people who travel around the world, you know, like lately, like that Nicole Tung and those kinds of people, they'll have a lot of galleries because it'll be different places they've been.
Yeah. It's like each gallery is a story in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I think a dozen, any more than that. And it's a lot.
It gets silly.
You're asking a lot of the user to sit down at one time.
And I think 20 to 30 images in a gallery is not out of the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a roll. 24,
like
30, you know.
50, 60, that gets too many.
It gets a lot.
No one's going to get all the way to 60. You know,
not unless your work is absolutely superb and, you know, it takes a lot of time.
Right.
Number three, paragraph three, subsection 14.
A.
No, A, right, A. What are the pros and cons of selling prints directly from your site? And what do you think about printing yourself versus outsourcing?
Well, you're doing some of this now. Do you like the idea of printing yourself?
I do like the idea of printing.
Because you like printing or because you're worried about the quality issues?
Both. I do enjoy printing. I enjoy doing digital test stripping the way I did in the darkroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I printed analog for years and really enjoy that process. It's different now. But you know, I've tried to use the similar paper to darkroom paper. I thought about having it outsourced and it was
to a fancy place or to an Adorama kind of place or to a Society 6 kind of place.
No, to a fancy place.
Okay.
To a fancy place. But, and it was actually a discussion that we had on the show, about signing and adding the signature, not so much as a, you know, oh, this is my signature and this is, you know, whatever. It just as a, I've signed off on this. I had a hand in this.
This one's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
So I like that part of it. But now you have done both. You have printed yourself and you have gotten some terrific results out of Elko and Adorama Pix.
Yeah, I think Elko does a great job. Adorama does a good job too. Elko I've never had a problem with. I mean, there have been a couple times where I've gotten stuff from Adorama over the years, but it's been so many years and they keep changing, sort of rebooting their printing stuff.
Are they changing machines or what are they doing?
Sometimes they'll just sort of, I don't know if they're changing machines or they'll move everything and they'll kind of say, oh, we're using Fuji papers now. So our whole workflow is different and it's new and improved and you know, all that kind of stuff. Elko, I think, is great. I've also used Society 6 to allow people to print different sizes, and that gets shipped straight to them with a frame around it and stuff. I've sold, I don't know, half dozen or a dozen things.
How's the quality Society 6 versus Elko?
I don't know that I've seen one of my things from Society 6, and it was fine, and it was good. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't, you know, this is a beautiful print unto itself.
Difference between, would it be sort of offset quality versus
maybe
hand
a little
printed?
Better than offset quality, okay. But okay. Not C print quality from what I remember. Elko and Adorama both do a great job, especially if you have your home system calibrated well. It'll look pretty close to, you know, it'll be within a handful of percent of what you were looking for, which is as much
I mean,
as you
I've
can
thought
ever ask
about
for.
That. I've thought about adding the extra step and having them print it, send it to me, and then I sign it and send it to the customer.
Yeah. Usually, if I'm sending it out, it's because it's something bigger than 13 by 19, so I can't print it here. Or I'm printing a bunch for, say, my portfolio, in which case I don't want to chew through $300 worth of ink to print $120 worth of prints. So, and take the time to do it, and then one of them comes out, and the printer caught the bottom edge and there's a black splotch there because the ink, you know what I mean? Those kinds of headaches.
Yep, which are common in some cases.
Yeah. And so I just sort of said, you know what, the hell with it. I'll just get them there. And most of the time they look great and more power to it. Then I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So yeah, there's that.
Number four, last one. You're right.
Last one in the fourth question. Go ahead.
What criteria would you use to decide to add a gallery or portfolio on a site versus starting an entirely new site? For example, commercial work versus fine art versus street.
I like keeping all my work on one site. However, there are sets of pictures that I've taken before that I like that I don't have on my site for reasons of, they just don't quite fit the kind of photographer I'm trying to portray. Does that make sense? So like I've taken, I don't know, nudes of 25 people or something. And some of them I think are really nice, but I don't really want to get hired to shoot nude stuff. So I just don't put it on my website, you know, as a gallery, for example. So I think that personally I like it all in one thing. Then you don't have you don't have another 12 things to maintain. Yeah. There are some people who do the commercial stuff and then do the fine art stuff, but you know,
I like it all under one umbrella.
Yeah, me too.
Make it easier for your people to find all of your work instead of just some of your work.
Yeah, I had a friend who was a botanical shooter for years, like shot flowers and stuff for what's her name? Who's the woman who went to prison?
Who's the woman who went to prison?
Martha
the hotel
Stewart.
Person?
Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart. Okay.
She used to shoot a lot of stuff for Martha Stewart magazines and that kind of stuff, you know, like beautiful botanical-y stuff. But she also had a wedding business on the side, and she had those as two separate things. Christine Foley. Her work is wonderful, and I will put a link in the show notes because it's really good. But for a long time, she had multiple websites. Just to keep things separated, which, you know, was a way of looking at it. And I think she's slowly moved over to doing almost all sort of portraits and events and that kind of stuff. So,
I would tend to go more with subdomains, you know, fine art dot.
Sure. Yeah. But have them accessible from the main.
Yep.
So yeah.
Have them accessible, but you could then promote them almost separately if you needed to.
It's interesting that subdomains have sort of gone into, it's not as common anymore.
No, they used to be.
Fallen out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only place that I can remember seeing subdomains lately or in the last, I don't know, let's say a couple of years, is somebody will do like store dot blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I think, do Squarespace sites automatically go down one level like that? So if I typed blog.billwadman.com, will it go to the blog? No, it will not. Interesting.
No, you have to set that up.
Can you set up subdomains on Squarespace sites?
I think so.
Okay, I've never.
Well,
you
would do it. You would do it in your host.
Oh, right.
You would do it on the hover end.
Yeah, and that could point to specific.
Right.
Pages
right.
on your other right. site. Yeah. So anyway, things to think about. You done with that one? Or you got anything else?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm good.
Okay. Andrew Lossing, which would you rather do, assuming you had an aptitude for both, write or take photographs, if you could only do one? By writing, I'm including all similar ways you might to taking photos, e.g. telling a story, documenting your life, create lyrical or fantastical content, etc., etc.
Right.
See, and I would take photographs, so...
Yeah.
There's...
I mean, it would be a tough decision because I think they complement one another, but ultimately I would probably want to connect with somebody whose photographs I connected with on a deep level and figure out a way to collaborate and be at least a portion of their voice.
Right. I gotcha. Yeah, right. Yeah. But that does kind of speak to fundamentally where we're coming at the same topic. You're coming from the as much about the thinking and writing about it as the taking the pictures. Where I, you know what I'm saying? Like we're discussing it from
sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes.
I feel like our predilections are on two different sides of that, which is makes probably what makes this interesting.
Sometimes. I mean, look, yeah. Lest we forget, I've been taking pictures since 1981.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, you just said that you very quickly said that you would write. You'd rather write.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, sure, sure. But yeah. It's a preference. It's not an right. inability.
No, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying like you enjoy one side more than the other, it seems.
At the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that'll change going back to analog. I don't know. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's next?
All right. Peter Geiser.
Okay.
This may be more appropriate for Ask Bill and Dan.
Okay. What's the question? Let's see. Oh,
I don't know.
See.
That's a little offensive.
What's the question?
But should I be converting my RAW files into DNG? I shoot Nikon and Fuji and process in Lightroom. Thanks. Why would that be more appropriate for Ask Bill and Dan?
I don't know. It's a nerdy technical question that,
Peter.
Well, we're going to answer it anyway.
Right.
I convert to DNG. For those of you who don't know, DNG stands for digital negative. It's an Adobe standard that is based upon the TIFF open spec, ultimately. So, and basically you take your proprietary RAW file and you're turning it into a sort of lingua franca RAW file called a DNG. Keeps all the raw data, keeps most of the metadata. Some people complain that it kills some of the metadata. For example, on Nikon and Canon cameras in the original raw format, things like which focus point was highlighted when the picture was taken are in the metadata, and that doesn't come over. So, you know, you theoretically might lose some tertiary metadata. One of the nice things it does actually is it losslessly compresses the DNG information or the raw information off the sensor. Mm-hmm. So the files
you
are smaller.
About 20%.
Right. But if you have 15. A drive full of 50,000 pictures, you suddenly saved yourself gigabytes, you know, tens of gigabytes, hundreds of gigabytes. The reason I do it are two. One, it keeps any changes you make to the DNG inside the DNG as opposed to in an XMP
right.
sidecar
There's no
file.
There's no little sidecar file, yeah. yeah.
Right, which is really, really nice, especially in Lightroom. If you go into your catalog settings and you tell it to write changes back to the XMP, it writes all that information internally into the DNG file. So if your Lightroom catalog gets borked, all that information about what you've done to that RAW file is still inside that one DNG file. So if you send it to another friend and he opens it in Lightroom, it should look the same. Right. The other thing I like about it is the fact that, you know, a digital rebel 20 years from now may not be a common standard, whatever crazy CR2 Canon file, but the DNG standard has become pretty solid and is an open standard. Exactly. You know, what's in the information in the file is common knowledge, is open, as opposed to it being proprietary. So I feel like the files have a better chance of being openable 10, 15 years from now than they might if they were in the proprietary manufacturer's files system. That's why I use it. You convert to DNG or do you use
I don't. Yeah. I used to, and I just got tired of waiting, to be honest with you. You know, because you're converting on import. Cameras, Pentax and I think Leica, are able to shoot natively in DNG.
In fact, the camera I have right next to me, I've been shooting natively in DNG.
Oh, the 645.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really nice because you bring them in and it doesn't take another 10 minutes to convert them all.
Right.
Especially big giant ones, you don't want to. However, interestingly enough, speaking of the 645Z, Capture One will not open even the DNG files from this camera.
That is what I have heard.
It did, but now it won't. Like they changed it. Like they've locked it out. Which is fine. The files look great in Lightroom and I made a custom profile and it tethers to Lightroom really well. We did test the other day. It was great. So whatever. I'm not worried about it. Yeah. You got anything else to say?
I have nothing to say.
About that Justice question Pang. Or in general?
Right. No, just about that. Justice Pang.
I got that one.
This is mine. Oh, yeah. Is it? Oh, yeah, it is. Sorry.
Justice Pang, how do you approach reading books, especially photographer monographs?
Reading photo books.
Oh, I'm sorry. Reading photo books, especially photographer monographs, as opposed to a curator selected exhibit collections. I've noticed that I like to go through the photos first and then read the ASP after having gone through the photos. ASP?
I don't know. ASP, American Society of Photography.
Whatever.
The ASP.
Do you read the text with the pictures? Do you read the text before the pictures?
I read it in order. I like to read the thing start to finish.
Okay.
I
look
especially
at the pictures.
Especially the essays. I love
then,
the essays.
See, maybe I'll read the essays, but most of the time I'm just looking at the pictures. I can't read.
Yeah. I want to become better as the catch-all, but more articulate in how I review or evaluate or critique photographs.
Photographs or photo books?
Both,
photographs,
actually.
Okay.
So I've been rereading the Aperture anthology, which is superb.
Yeah, I gotta get that.
Read it. Yeah, it's terrific. And it's it's not only is it the formation of the magazine, but it's insight into the mind of Minor White and the mind of Ansel Adams and the mind of all of these people who contributed to those very early years with Aperture magazine. And it's a fascinating read. And one of the books that that Minor White suggested, which I have ordered, is a book published in 1950 by George Bowes called Wingless Pegasus, A Handbook for Critics.
Yep.
And while it is a 1950 title, I think the principles are still valid, and I want to feel like I'm more prepared to talk about it, and I want to feel like I'm looking deeper than just I like it, I don't like it.
Sure. Okay. And is that by going another level in meta analysis of the analysis, or is that a matter of just reading more deeply into the text as it is?
I don't know. I haven't gotten the book yet.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what it offers, but I'll definitely let you know.
By the way, the Aperture book, the anthology is on sale on their website for $29.
Well worth it.
Which is cheaper than the Amazon price.
Yeah. It's a terrific book. Let's see. Where is it? It's about as thick. I'm looking at it right now. It's about it's about the size of Road to Seeing. For those of you who have purchased the Dan Winters massive Road to Seeing volume,
right?
It's about that size, but it's terrific, terrific.
Todd Schick.
Oh, this Todd is Schick. What can I do to get a more zero Fs given attitude to street shots? What can I do to get a more zero F's given attitude to street shots? I'm not sure what I mean by that. What
he means
keep
by going.
That?
Let's see what he says.
Some issues that affect what I'm going for are I'm shy. I don't like confrontation. People are wary of photographers. People where I live expect more personal space than other parts of the world, I think. I often wonder how some of the greats would go about their photo making in a tiny little town like the one I live in. I watch videos online, and the places are usually full of people everywhere. It's not like that here, much harder to be inconspicuous. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I think that some people blend in more than others when it comes to being a photographer. You know, there are people I see who are out taking pictures and you never even noticed they were there. Mm-hmm. You know, and then mm-hmm. there's other people who the minute they pull a camera out, everyone's looking at them like, don't take a picture of me. You know, I feel like there's a certain level of just innate calmness you have about you that people, calmness is the wrong word. Do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, like, I do.
Certain people just have a way about them that makes them easier to just walk around and take pictures. And maybe they'll smile or maybe they won't even ask and take the picture and then smile if somebody looks like they're getting angry, or maybe they'll go ask and just say, hey, do you mind if I take your portrait? You know, mm-hmm. I think that it's also, if you're shy and you don't like confrontation, if you want to overcome those things, great. If you don't want to overcome those things, well, maybe street photography is not for you. You know, that's okay right. too. You know, something else might be. What do you think?
I agree with you to a large degree. I think the way you move, there's a terrific, I'm looking for it even now. Here it is. There's a Magnum photographer named Ian Berry. And while this is a promo, this video, I'll put it in here, I'll link it to you. There's a promo on YouTube for the Panasonic GX7 when it came out back in 2013.
Sure.
But there's some great information in there because they sort of, it's a vignette of Ian Berry's shooting style as much as it is of the camera. And one of the things that he said in here that I've remembered ever since is with regard to street photography, to move slowly. Mm-hmm. Move slowly through the streets, because then when you stop to take a picture, you're not as noticeable.
Right.
You haven't come to a sudden stop after walking at a brisk pace, forcing people to move around you. You're sort of ambling along and you come to rest. And in his view, it's much less noticeable.
Yep. I think that he also has... I'm just watching some of the video now. He definitely has a way about him, which is kind of what I mean, where he's just kind of moving. He's doing his thing, but completely forgettable as an individual going past you, you know, mm-hmm. like he doesn't draw attention to himself.
Now there may be something to do with the camera as well. If you'll remember from a couple weeks ago, we talked about Daido Moriyama,
yep.
who has really no use for bringing a camera up to his face. He doesn't like it
right.
because it's a barrier between he and his subject. He uses a little point and shoot, so his face is always visible to his subject.
Yep.
That's something to think yep. about.
Or just small versus large. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm, who
sure.
can... You can take yeah, nowadays, you can take a picture on your phone versus the camera I have next to me, which is this huge behemoth.
Right.
You wouldn't walk around the street and be unobtrusive using it. You know?
Right. One of the things that I have taken to doing that I learned from Coachy Hernandez... when I'm shooting with my phone is I always have my headphones in and I use the volume rocker on the headphone as a shutter release. So I basically just keep my phone at my chest, pull it away ever so slightly just to see framing and composition. But people see you on headphones. They don't pay attention to you.
Sure.
They assume that you're in your own world. You're on a conversation. You're less conspicuous.
Yep.
And you're not raising the thing. It's just, you know, you're sort of framing, and Hugh does this. Hugh Tallman does this with, what does he use? A Canon GX15, I think. But he if you ever see him in the subway station wandering around, he's got his camera right about at his heart. And
there's a lot of pictures of him doing that too.
So yeah, and he knows the focal length. He knows the field of view of that camera and is able to, without raising the camera to his eye, get terrific perspectives.
Yep. He's also a relatively tall guy too.
Yeah, he's a big guy. So it might be in the gear, it might be in the way you carry yourself, it might be a combination of both.
Indeed, yeah. It's a good question.
Josh
Eikenberry.
This is you.
That's Jill's younger son.
Is it really?
No. It could be, actually. I don't know. There was a Jill Eikenberry. Isn't she an actress?
Actress, I believe. Yeah.
What was she in?
I don't know. Okay. I recognize the name, though. Jill.
And you're going to look it up?
I am.
In your opinion, do you find other photographers difficult to collaborate with?
LA.
There you go. I don't mean personality-wise. I just mean getting them to meet and talk and discuss and work together. What do you got?
Wait, let me read this again. In your opinion, do you find photographers... I don't mean persona. Discussing and talking and working together. I've not really collaborated with anyone since I've been here. I would love to, but I mean, I've only been on the East Coast a year.
You do a lot of meeting and talking and discussing, but not working with other photographers.
Correct. Yeah, we'll just sit down. I sit down and talk to a lot of creatives here.
Do you see that as collaboration in his definition?
I see any conversation as a collaboration.
Right. So, yeah, we get into semantics a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I would love, though, to, like I alluded to earlier, I'd love to find somebody that would want to collaborate on two different sides of the same project. You know, I would be absolutely willing to give up the photography end to write, for example, and then maybe switch it up and collaboration. I would love to, but I haven't had really any cause to do it yet, but it's on the horizon, I hope.
Got it. I have hung out with a number of photographers in the past couple of years where some photographers like to talk about photography and some photographers hate to talk about photography. And there is, especially in a place like New York, there is an element of, if you do anything like what I do, I want to keep my cards close to my chest, you know, for commercial reasons, which is fine, you know. And then there's other people who are perfectly fine talking about it. And then it's nice sometimes when you talk about somebody who does nothing like what you do. So then there isn't this strange sort of soft animosity between you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that. Yeah.
Thomas Sorensen.
If you had a budget of up to 2,000 US and wanted to print A3 or A2, what printer would you go for?
How big is A2 paper?
Easy question. A3, 16 by 20, A2, I think 13, 19 roughly.
So that's 13, 19, okay.
Epson P800. Final answer.
Really? Not the printer you have?
No.
Why not?
A3 is too big.
Okay.
I'm sorry. A2 is too big. A2 is bigger than what I can go.
Oh, A2 is like the 17-inch version.
Yeah.
Okay. Does Canon make a 17-inch printer?
I think the Pro 1 is 17. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk industry standard, quote unquote, the one that, what is the old adage about IBM? No one ever gets fired for buying IBM.
Right.
No one ever gets fired for buying an Epson.
I dig my printer. Yeah. I will say that. Yeah. I dig my Canon Pixma. I like it a lot. It does a terrific job. Colors are vibrant. It's fast.
It was
it's
a really
quiet.
Good deal.
Yeah, it was a great deal. Yeah, it was a great deal. But things I don't like about it, the ink cartridges are only 14 milliliter per color. And it doesn't allow me to print on thicker media, which...
Where's the limit? Where's the limit?
0.6 millimeter.
Oh, that's pretty thin. So like heavy, almost card papers are the limit?
Yeah, I can do. I mean, I'm printing on 320 GSM paper and it's fine. But my 3800 and my 7600 could print on mat board, which is like 1.5, you know, 1.5 mil. This is fine for what it is, but I think not long from now, I will probably... I've been looking actively for an Epson 7600 again. I miss that printer. If anybody knows of someone selling or not wanting an Epson 7600, let me know. Because they were terrific printers. If the budget could go any, what do you think?
I think that is, if that's the Epson that is the current Epson on that level, what do I have? I have the P3000 or the 3000?
R3000.
Something R3000, that's what I have, mm-hmm. which is a 13-inch, so not quite big enough for you. I love the fact that I can have it in my closet hooked up right. to everything via Wi-Fi, and I don't have to worry about it. That's fantastic.
The problem of going bigger, Thomas, is in the Epson line anyway, when you the P800, I think they're like 1200.
Yep.
Something like that.
1200 bucks.
When you go up, to the P6000, and that's $3,000.
Right.
So you're more than, and there's nothing in between. So you're more than doubling to go up 6 inches in width, which, you know, a 6-inch jump in width open and roll paper and all that opens you up to a whole host of new opportunity. Yeah. But it's a much larger unit and it's more than double the cost.
I mean, the P800 could do roll paper. Its ink cartridges are 80 milliliters. So good yeah. size.
No third party ink.
Not so big so that it's like a big chunky thing. You know, yeah. like sometimes it looks like a orange juice canister you're sticking in there full of ink.
Right.
This is a good size where it's big enough, but not so big that it's sick. But yeah, you know, yeah. I generally stick with the manufacturer ones anyway.
The 7600 cartridges were like the size of a VHS tape. They were giant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they lasted forever, I'm sure.
Yeah. They were like 220 mil, I think is what they were.
Yeah. So three times the size. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Hope that helps, Thomas.
Oh, there's another question. If a budget could stretch a bit, would you change anything? If you were trying to sell prints, would you print yourself or outsource it? We already discussed that.
Already covered that. Yep.
Bobby Tingle, is it better to have your portfolio and blog on the same website? Yes, we answered that a minute ago. Or is it okay to have them on different sites as long as there's a link to each on respective sites? I guess you could, just not our personal preference.
Yeah, I don't quite get why you would. Right. All of the major platforms are perfectly capable blogging platforms as well as portfolio
right.
platforms and vice versa.
Yep.
So I don't quite understand why you would want, you know, I mean, if it was back in the days of like, you know, Zenfolio and Blogger,
sure.
okay, or yeah. something to that effect, you know, SmugMug yeah. or something. But now, I mean, if you go with Squarespace or
yeah.
Weebly or Wix or WordPress yep. or, you know, any yep. of them, perfectly capable.
Yep. For either a hobbyist or someone trying to build a business, currently I have a blog on Blogger, a portfolio using Adobe Portfolio site, which is now included with my monthly Lightroom PS Photoshop subscription, and SmugMug site with all of my photos. I have my own URLs for the Adobe Portfolio and SmugMug, but I'm wondering if it'd be better to incorporate them all into a Squarespace site. Yeah. Personally, I say tighten that ship down a little bit.
Yeah. There's definitely some value in my opinion, and sounds like Bill too, in consolidating all that.
Yeah. All right. Next.
Tim Schuf. Bill.
Yes.
Hey, Bill.
Uh-huh.
Bill.
Yep.
Bill.
Present.
Bill, what settings do you use for web export? Of course, I aim for good enough to look at the photos on any device, but still don't want the best quality out there just like that. And also consider the size for loading speed.
What do you do?
If I'm exporting JPEGs, I'm usually hovering around 75%.
Okay.
And then I also, because I use WordPress, I also use a plugin called WP Smush, which is it's a compression utility that takes another 30% or so off with negligible, if any, difference in appearance.
Hmm. I am a JPEG at 85%, 2000 pixels on the long end with output sharpening screen sharpening normal. Mm-hmm. That's my game.
Do you sharpen when you print or do you not?
I do sharpen when I print, and I also print at 360 DPI cause it matches the driver for Epson really well.
Okay.
So if you go higher or lower, it's actually a lot less detail you notice in the prints.
Yep. Native isn't native in Lightroom still 240?
Yeah, so I changed that to 360. Mm-hmm. And then I do output sharpening. Although, you know, you could choose glossy or matte. I usually do glossy, but I kind of do low or medium. I definitely don't do high. You don't need that much. Yeah, I mean, it's all experimentation. But to me, 2,000 pixels on the long end with, 85%, it's like I want my stuff to look good. And and so I go out of my way to make sure it looks good. Where were we? Oh, I just slid up, so I lost it. Is that the end of the question? Yes, it was.
Wait, no.
Oh, yeah.
There's another one from
best
Tim.
Quality out there like that. I just won't consider size for loading speed. I don't really worry about loading speed that much anymore.
Right.
I mean, I know that Squarespace automatically sort of creates multiple versions of it. So
right.
that when it only wants a little one, it grabs a little one. It does all that stuff automatically behind the scenes. So the source that I want to give it is pretty...
control over that, though, do you, in terms of compression?
No, you don't. But I'm just saying that... So I want to give it a big, good one that's high quality and it can do the rest. It's probably the equivalent of your Smush plugin.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Built in, yeah. Part 2, you want to read that or you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
Second Tim's question. You guys talk about prints a lot, mostly inkjet prints, only because that's what one able to do at home or because they're different from C print qualities. I don't print at home, mostly good quality online places for both. I've looked at samples, couldn't really make out why I choose one over the other. Could you give a little or bigger primer on inkjet versus C prints for someone who grew up all digital and has never set foot in a dark room? Also, I just got the Lightroom play on words. Lightroom, darkroom, got it.
Lightroom, darkroom, yeah.
Theoretically, modern C print or modern inkjet printers, especially up until the past few years, pigment printers, last a long time. Arguably, are more light fast than C prints are. If they're in light, they generally have arguably a larger measurable gamut than C prints do.
Yeah, a lot of wider color gamut. Sure.
C prints are usually, most printers don't go much above sRGB when it comes to gamut, or they'll crush whatever you give them down to sRGB. So there's arguments to be made there if you're a landscape photographer and you really want to get crazy with blues and greens and stuff in the sky and water. Inkjet print would probably look pretty good. The thing about your eyes is that if you take your print your great picture on a great monitor and you print it out and you don't ever hold it up and compare it to the one that's on your screen, that print C print from wherever you get it from will probably look really great and you'd never know that you were missing anything when it came to saturation or, you know, that kind of sort of gamut.
Depending on how you shoot, you might notice some banding, you might notice, you know, it's not necessarily the colors themselves, it's the colors between the colors.
And there's also arguments to be made that, I mean, C prints are light sensitive and then put through chemicals. You know, it's like old school, very analog. So there's more questions over specific quality based upon the chemistry and that kind of stuff. You know, everything has to be really perfect. But all this stuff looks really great. And so don't think too much about it. I mean, some people like the idea of buying inkjet prints and some people like the idea of buying C prints for some reason, chromogenic prints, but you know, it's,
you're not going to be around long enough to notice a difference in
exactly.
either of them.
There are C prints. So if you put a C print in a frame with just regular glass, it will fade faster than definitely a pigment inkjet. And most of the new dye inkjets, will last longer than a C print will. You know, most of your pictures that you had from when you were a kid were C prints. You know, that you got it in Automat or whatever the hell they called them. Photomat.
Photomat.
Yeah. You know, a lot of those.
Did you ever have those on the East Coast? Was that an East Coast thing too?
There was Photomats, and my father actually at one point owned a photo processing place. So
they were everywhere. Gosh, yeah. I seem to remember
like in mall
them
parking
everywhere.
Lots, right?
Yeah. Little hut
yeah.
with the orange roof.
Yeah,
kind of a yellow orange roof.
In fact, isn't there one in Back to the Future in the opening scene?
At the Twin Pines Mall?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Doesn't the bus go through it? The VW bus?
I think it might be, yeah. Automats are cool. Or photomats are cool. Or they were back in the day.
Right.
So that's our answer to that one. Let's we have a sponsor this week too. So let's talk about Squarespace. Since we're talking about Squarespace so much.
Since we're talking about Squarespace, we should talk about Squarespace.
Man, Squarespace does come up a lot when it comes to, I just want to build a site and I don't know how to do it, or what should I use? It's like, well, unless you have a real good reason to use something else, just use Squarespace. They're great people, they make a great product.
I will tell you, in all seriousness, I've thought about, even this week, I thought about going back because I am so tired of monkeying with my site.
And when he says monkeying, he's not kidding. He actually has a monkey there next to him.
I do. His name is Javier, and he's a talented coder. I was a little intimidated.
It's you know, here's the thing, Jeffrey. Squarespace provides you with all the tools that help people turn their passions into businesses. Customizable e-commerce websites.
What if passion is your business?
Well, then they have a customizable e-commerce website from internationally recognized brands to your favorite local shops. Squarespace is trusted by hundreds of thousands of shabby businesses.
Of shabby businesses.
Savvy businesses all over the world. You like that?
Yeah. Shabby. You got a shabby business? Squarespace is the tool for you. What I'm trying to say is it fell off a truck, but I got a dynamite site.
But it
okay?
looks fantastic. It looks professionally designed.
It's going to look so good on you.
I don't got no coding skills, but it looks great. It looks professional. You like that? It looks professional.
Like a pro I did.
Yeah. Hey, it was so easy to use, even I could do it.
Right. Right.
Even Louie over here could do it, right. Huh?
Louie, hey, show Louie. Him that page.
Yeah. Oh?
Right. I thought you was going to do it, Paulie.
Plus, you get a free domain name for a year. When you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. So it saves you the $15 and the hassle of buying it somewhere else and hooking it all up. Makes it work great. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP. To get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for On Taking Pictures. Thank you very much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. They really do make a great product, and I use it, and Jeffrey uses it, and a lot of people use it. And man, we've got a lot of people who wrote in who've said, oh, you know, I set up a site this week on Squarespace, you know, so good
for
you
because,
guys.
You know what?
What?
Because we're talking about this.
Yep.
If you have built a site with Squarespace, if you're listening to this show and you've built a site with Squarespace, write us in, podcast it on Taking Pictures. We'd love to see it.
It'd be fun to call out a few next time we have a Squarespace ad.
Yeah. So, you know, let us know. Let us see some of your stuff.
Yep.
Good. Podcast it on takingpictures.com.
Hey,
David because
Lawrence.
Somebody will ask,
yep.
How did you find that the native DPI of your printer was 360 when Lightroom defaults to 240. How would someone know that, and where did you find it? Because somebody's going to call in and ask.
Nerd. I honestly don't know where I would have found that other than nerdy people talking about printing out of Lightroom.
Okay.
To Epson printers. I don't. I think that my old Canon, I had an old Canon 9900, 9100, something like that, 10 years ago. It really liked being fed 720.
Hmm.
So it would up-res stuff, and that would tend to look better. But that was so early on and all this stuff that I think the drivers just weren't as good, and I was running Windows, and you know who knows how many different variables were different. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is a sort of... a native resolution that all the printer drivers are sort of looking for, and it varies by manufacturer. So for some it's 300, for some it's 240, for some it's 360. Some of them like even higher res. I don't obsess about it. It's just that that's what I figured out, and it looks great on my printer. Yeah.
All right.
Perfect. I will see if I can find there's got to be a native inkjet photo printer resolution. I'm sure there's a...
Here's something on the Canon website.
What does Canon say?
You can ignore printer resolution numbers over 1440 for all practical purposes.
Right.
The reality is printers print at 360 DPI. 360 times 4 CMYK equals 1440.
Okay, so there you go. So even the ones, even Canon's kind of saying 300 or 360? Yeah. A printer that prints, this is a Digital Photo Pro, a printer that prints at 360 DPI, such as the Epson line of printers, or 300 DPI, such as the Canon line of printers. This is from 2011, so this might have changed.
So probably pretty close, though.
But you know what it is? Do whatever printer you have, do a search and and see what they say, you know, and it...
And if you can't find anything, print a test strip, you know, or print a couple, you know, print one at 720, print 360, whatever.
300, you know, like go down the ones that other people mention and see if you see any difference. Maybe you won't.
Yeah.
I think nowadays the printer drivers are a lot better at doing whatever they can with whatever you throw at them.
Yeah, interpolation. Yeah, sure, sure.
So I, you know, I don't really even worry about it. You don't have to really worry about it that much. And then a lot of big places, like when you send to Elko for anything over 20 by 30, they don't want anything any bigger than 240 DPI.
So, oh, really?
Yep.
For a large format like that? No kidding.
Yep. And in fact, usually most of those systems have some sort of very specific, very high-end rip, which is a raster interpolation program, something like that, right? Which
something like that.
Which is software that is specific.
You used to have to buy that separately. Remember that back in the
right.
day?
Right. So print high-end, really high-end printers, especially high-end like photo printers and C-print things and machines and all that, have software that is sort of the front end that you feed images into, and it does whatever it needs to do to make them look at best on that printer. And most of the time, if you just give them your highest res thing at 300 DPI, if it wants it 360, it'll rejigger it to 360 on input, you know, and it'll do what it needs to do. Or if you're printing giant ones, most of the time you don't need to up-res. Let the printer do the up-resing, because I'm sure the rip will do the up-resing on its own.
Mm.
That's all I'm saying.
Is that, all right.
Yeah. Right. Next one's you. What do we do?
David Lawrence.
Ah.
We all know what Bill does for a living, but what does Jeffrey do for income? Do we? Do we all know that?
Well, Jeffrey works as a lady of the night.
I do. And as I have mentioned, I am a monkey wrangler for writing code for websites.
Yep.
Do you have a jobby job or freelance? Well, you know, we used to make more money for doing the show.
Yeah.
Considerably more. But that has dropped about 90% in the past year and a half.
Well, the last more than that.
A couple
of
years?
Yeah. I think mostly due to the market of all that stuff.
Yeah. What do I do? I'm like a lot of you people. I do freelance stuff. I do voiceovers. I do design projects. I just launched prints. I do all sorts of things. Yep. I am sort of the poster child, like a lot of you, for multiple revenue streams.
Yep.
Because it's tough to have one revenue stream and be a maker or creative. And I those are odd words to throw around, but it's difficult to do that.
And arguably, having multiple revenue streams also keeps it interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've will finish my book soon. So right. My book will be out. That will be not only another revenue stream, but I can't predict what opportunities that's going to uncover. That's one of the things that I'm most excited about, that I don't know what that's going to lead to.
Right.
I was talking to CJ Chilvers, who I mentioned at the top of the show. I was talking to him a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying, I don't know if it's going to sell. What if it doesn't sell? And he says, that's not the only measure. He said, my first book, it didn't sell very well at all, but it helped me to land a job that I've been happily doing for 15 years.
Right. Right.
So you there are these sort of ancillary benefits beyond just how many copies or what was the back end take.
Sure.
So
I think, just doing any, yes, we make some money from the show. Yes, I shoot editorial stuff. I'm shooting a commercial thing this week. I sell usage of older images a lot. That ends up being a revenue stream. So there's also even within my world, different ways that it all works out.
Sure. I think there has to be. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I collectively know quite a few photographers, and I think you would agree that we don't know a lot of them that are only making money selling pictures, making pictures.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, absolutely. Tim Helps. God, that's got to be a fun last name.
Does
to
he?
Have.
Does he really?
I don't know. We'll find out. following on a bit from David Lawrence's question, interesting. If you were independently wealthy and had an income allowing you to do anything, what would you do photographically? Are there photographic opportunities that are hard to reach without lack of finances? Also, I'd like to know how many holes are there in a crumpet? Am I supposed to know? Is that a reference to something that we are supposed to know?
Is that like how many licks does it take to get to center of a Tootsie Pop?
I do believe...
Three, though, is the answer to that.
One, a two, a three.
Right.
God.
Wealthy and... anything photographically. I will tell you.
That's going in the show notes, by the way.
It should. if we are talking photographically, I love what Ian Ruther is doing with his giant wet plate truck camera traveling all over these enormous, you know, 40 and 50 inch wet plate photographs. I love that. I love what Joni Sternbach is doing, kind of zeroing in on a niche of photographing surfers with wet plate. I love her work.
Right.
I would probably do that. I would probably focus very tightly on one particular niche or one particular group of people and take as much time as needed to photograph them. Analog. Okay.
You'd choose people though.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think that there would be, yes, I think I would, because I think there would still be some sort of story component in there.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. You, what do you think?
Money is no object. I would do a lot of what I already do. I would just contact more people around the world and I would probably travel to go shoot them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like if there's some author or something who lives up in Alaska and I'm just like, I want to go shoot that guy. I just get on a plane and go to Alaska, you know?
Right.
But I don't think I would change that much, which is part of the reason why I love doing what I do because it is what I would do if I wasn't making money doing it. So in fact, there's a lot of times I don't make money doing it, but I do it anyway, you know? So,
you know who else I love his life at least from an external,
you know?
from what I know is David Duchemin.
Oh, okay.
You know, using the publishing side to help finance his pro bono photographic life.
Sure.
And goes out and photographs projects that he believes in, goes out and works with people that he believes in. I love that.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are people, a lot of people who would go and, oh, I want to travel to Africa and shoot such and such, or I want to go to somewhere, go on safari, or I want to go travel through Europe. Yeah. I mean, those are all reasonable things. For me, I would travel to meet people I wanted to meet, but it wouldn't be to go a specific place to just shoot the people there. It would be like, oh, I want to go see Jeffrey and he's in DC, so I'm going to DC, you know. It's interesting. Shula, this is you.
Shula, Jeffrey, any chance you will sell t-shirts again? I love my Hasselblad. It's so soft and comfortable. Would love to buy another one. Recently got a 4x5 field camera. So I'd love to see a t-shirt. Okay. So the short answer,
where were those made?
They were made from another, they were made third party. The short answer is yes, but they will be part of some other things that will see the light of day, photography related products that will see the light of day shortly. What would be correct? Soonish, shortly-ish.
Yes.
One of the two. Take your pick. But I need a little more time because I am setting up a new place to do this. So hang tight. But yes, there will be some new things on the horizon, not just shirts, other things that are going to be really geared toward photographers and photography.
Wow, we're like way behind in time. We should get going.
We're
an hour and 20 minutes in already.
Well, we don't have to answer all of them.
Well, let's see what we can do. Right. Matthew Zhu, philosophical question. If you're witnessing a catastrophe unfolding before you, you happen to have a camera, what mode do you think your mind would enter? Would you document the tragedy or put the camera down and help the victims? Maybe something in between. I've always struggled with this hypothetical scenario. For instance, suppose you come upon someone trapped inside rubble. Do you stop to compose a picture first while they look at you saying, WTF, what are you doing? Before continuing on to help them? Me, I would put down the camera and album. I don't care.
Yeah, this is the main reason that photojournalism is not for me. I would have a very difficult time separating those things.
Yeah, I absolutely would put down the camera, throw it onto the rubble, and then go help the person.
But you're going to throw a camera at them? That's not helpful.
I would throw the camera out of the way in order to go help them.
There you go. Okay.
Camera is nothing that I do is more important than somebody's life or somebody's like actual well-being.
Right.
Nick Govis, it's you.
Nick Govis. Since sports generally have a delineated space they take place in, and areas where action will take place are more or less predictable, is there anything preventing sports photographers from being replaced by remote-controlled camera arrays? Spoiler, no, we saw this in the Olympics.
Yep.
Or even automated camera arrays. What about music concert photographers? Yeah, I would say that those things... I mean, look... You see terrific concert photography or concert filming, I would say.
Yep.
That's controlled by remote cameras.
Yeah, but there's still a guy. I mean, in that case, there's still a photographer at the other end of it making those decisions, right?
Sure.
Where the camera's going. But sure. I mean, how far are we from?
You know.
Yeah. And how far are we from that stuff becoming automated to the point where? You know, it's like Dan was working on all the stuff for Getty, you know, at all these different events.
Right.
And people go, they take 400 pictures of Hillary Clinton giving one sentence of her speech. And some guy goes through and says, okay, that's the good one. Well, how long is it till that becomes automated? You know,
I think that the selection process, the curation selection process, editing process is still a ways away before being automated.
Yeah, but
there's still someone that's going to have to make a decision.
You could call that 400 down to 10 by a machine, you know? Like
maybe.
I listened to this show called Terrence and Philip. It's a show about video production.
Also, it's a...
It's a... Yes, show it's a play on off South of that. Park? Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, talk a lot about, the Terrence and Philip show. I will put a link in the show notes. They talk a lot about, one of the guys is creating, software that will do a rough edit for you that you then go in and play with, basically like stringing things up and taking the good footage and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
It will automatically do that. And it's like, well, that used to be the job of an assistant editor. Now that's some, you know, a computer's job. And so I think that it'll slowly encroach to the point where, yes, I'm sure there will be less of those guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Martin Rotz, ice cream cone or cup?
Cone.
Lately cup for me. Rob Eves. I'll get this one too. Dogs or burgers?
Burgers.
Yeah, me too. Although I had one of each tonight.
Wow. Throwing caution to the wind.
Life is short, man. Give me another hit of that hamburger.
That's right. Alan Bailward, perhaps closely related to something you may have experienced with Bill. How does new gear affect your creativity? Bill. How does new gear affect your creativity? And is it worth it to get new toys to think differently, or does it fall into be more creative with what you have?
I think that both of those things are perfectly viable answers. I think it depends if you happen to have disposable income. I think that it depends how often you swap your toys out. If you're buying a new camera every 3 months because you think it's going to change your world, it's probably not going to be the camera. But if every
isn't there something to how different the gear is? I mean, if you're upgrading from 18 to 24 megapixels and virtually all the other features are the same.
If I go from a 5D Mark III to a 5D Mark IV, what am I really changing?
Right. But if you're going to
from that to the Pentax,
full frame to medium format, that might be a bigger jump in what that allows you to do.
Shooting with this camera, doing some tests this last week, is a very different experience than shooting with my Canon. But maybe we could discuss that next time.
I'd like to do that after you wrap it up and see how it was in production.
Yeah. In fact, let me put a note up there just so we don't.
This is next one's you, Nick Jeremiah.
Let's see. Where was I? Nick Jeremiah. Should I buy a 5D Mark III now or wait until early next or 5D Mark III now or wait until early next year and go for the 6D Mark II for architectural and fashion photography. The 5D Mark III versus the 5D Mark IV?
Doesn't matter. Ultimately, yeah, I wouldn't
both of these cameras are great, and you know, you could argue, I don't know what the autofocus might be better in the 5D series than the 6D series. If you actually are shooting fashion where the people are walking or something, that might be something to think about. But is it going to make any difference to the quality of the pictures? Nah. I mean, the 6D always seemed like a 5D little brother, which seemed to do almost everything the 5D did. So
also not for nothing, those seem like opposite ends of the spectrum, architecture and fashion photography.
Yeah, they kind of do. I mean, I think either one of those would be fine for that. 5D Mark III, you could probably get pretty cheap now. In fact, somebody want to buy mine? Okay.
Or go the Fuji medium format that they're supposed to be announcing.
Yeah. Well, that's a conversation for another time as well.
That's right. Well, that'll be a post Photokina.
Yeah. 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 Frank.
Frank Gelormini. Frank Gelormini. Who should I be approaching in order to land more freelance commercial portrait work?
I don't know. Well, if you find out, let me know.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you find them, would you give them Bill's number? Who are these people? How do you... Well, that's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you get in front of people? That's the age-old question.
It depends who you are, where you are, what kind of commercial work. Are you talking about, I want to take headshots for local, you know, mid-level corporation that has 300 employees? Or are you saying, I want to do the new ad for Apple? You know, those are two very different things.
Right.
How do you reach them? How do you find them? You send your portfolios around. You may have an agent. It may be that, and what do they want to see in terms of prepared portfolio? God, any or all of the things we've ever said about this subject. Everyone has their own opinion, and in many ways you have to go with your gut. You know, this thing I'm doing this week came from a personal project I did 5 years ago that they found on Pinterest, and they, you know, pitched it to their advertising client and they said, we love the look of that. Why don't we get the guy who shot the original things we're basing the pitch off of? And so they called me and hired me. So did I send this place my work? Nope. They just saw it. How did they see it? Well, who knows? The pinball, you know, the billiard balls of the universe collided.
Yeah. The giant pachinko game.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. No. And that's kind of, the giant pachinko game in the sky. Yeah, no, right. That's exactly what it is. And so you never know. And it depends where you live. Frank, I mean, if you live in New York, well, that's one thing. If you live in Nashville, it's another thing. If you live in, you know, Oklahoma City, well, then that's another thing, you know?
Each of the markets have their own tastes, their own requirements,
I mean, there's a lot of guys who work commercially within their, you know, sort of, mid-level 250,000 person cities, as of which there are a ton in New York, in America. And they get good work, and they are, you know, doing stuff and making a living.
I would maybe suggest identify some people maybe in your market that are doing the type of work that you want to do.
Yep.
And maybe do a little digging and see if you can figure out, do they have a rep?
Yep.
What type of work are they showing in their portfolio, and kind of work backwards from there.
I will tell you, there are a lot of situations where no one would even talk. There are a lot of people who will not let you come in to show your portfolio unless you are already represented, unless you have an agent. Like, there's this weird level of, if you have an agent, therefore you're already sort of pre-checked, you know?
Right.
It's a weird thing, but it's a reality. But then I know a lot of big photographers who never had a rep. And a lot of it's, you know, is knowing the right people or meeting the right people, or, you know, there's a lot of commercial nepotism going on, you know?
Right.
So that all exists too. Speaking of somebody who does very well, in what they do, which is architectural photography around Austin, is our next question.
Patrick Wong.
Yep. Is this mine or yours?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Patrick Wong. The most common phrase I hear is, quote, I hate the way I look in photographs, end quote. How do you handle such a response, and how do you help your subjects to relax or feel comfortable in front of the camera?
This is all you, because I do actually hate the way I look in photographs.
Well, How do you fix that? Well, first of all, you work for somebody else, so the subject doesn't get to see the pictures or make decisions based upon how they think they look. In the years of me doing this, I think there have been a handful of times where somebody really didn't like the pictures I took, or I took pictures and they asked me to like take them down from the web because they really disliked the way they looked and that kind of stuff. A lot of it, you know, you can't, as Conrad and I have been saying lately, you can't do anybody else's time. There's a lot of people who don't like the way they look for all kinds of reasons that have nothing to do with the pictures you take or the way they actually look, but because they've got stuff going on in their head about how they feel about themselves and whatnot, in which case there's not much you can do about that. You know, I mean, there's part of it. I like to play my sessions with somebody like a little mini therapy session where I get them talking and thinking and kind of getting into deep personal conversation between the two of us so that they sort of relax a little bit. And it's two people having a conversation and becoming friends. And then pictures are also part of that. That's sort of how I go about it. But there's other people who are really confrontational, you know, or there are people who are, where it's very professional, where it's, you know, all right, Jeffrey, turn your shoulder this way. Okay. Look up. Okay. Snap. Perfect. Okay. Now turn this way and do this. Okay. Perfect. You know, I imagine that that's a little bit, who's the guy who does the New York headshots that with the Peter Hurley. Whenever I see video of him shooting people, that's how it feels to me. Just from what the interactions that I've seen in video, you know, mm-hmm. It's very sort of like, I have my 10 things that I do with my clients, and it's the product that they want, and that's what I'm going for, and that's what I'm going to give you, you know. And
well, that's a very specific kind of look,
right,
that he's after, though.
Right.
I mean, he's looking at the kind of angles and the kind of lighting,
exactly,
and kind of
all
that kind of stuff that he's nailed. You know, mm-hmm. he's very good at it.
He's putting the subjects into the mold that he's created beforehand. I feel like that's mm-hmm. a lot of mm-hmm. what he's doing, which is certainly a way to go, and arguably a way to remove unknowns.
Sure.
You know,
he seems to have a great energy during a shoot too. I think that's part of it.
But it's all business. He doesn't seem like he's getting personal with the people, you know, which is certainly a way to do it. I mean, everyone's got their way of doing it, you know, give him a drink. Sometimes that actually helps, crazy enough, you know? And some people will say that, like, oh, you want a beer? Sure, I'll have a beer. And that they are a completely different person when they've just sat down for a minute, you know. Travis.
Do you want to pull through these last ones?
Yeah, we got four more. Let's finish it.
All right. Travis Anderson. What is the best way or some tips to get properly focused and sharp images? I feel like my images are not crystal clear. What kind of camera are you using, Travis? What kind of lenses are you using? Zooms, primes? Are you moving? Is the subject moving? Both?
Yeah. Stop down your lens to see. I mean, get rid of all the things that could possibly be making it not be sharp. You know, mm-hmm. stop down your lens to f/8. Make sure your shutter speed is, you know, 1/200th of a second. Take a picture in good light. Make sure, you know,
push the ISO if you don't have good light.
Yeah. Or, you know, make sure your camera is focused on the thing. Take the picture, then look at it. If that's not sharp, then something else is probably going on.
What mode are you using? A lot of the new cameras, they're not single point, or they, you know, maybe you set it to AF area or continuous you know.
I mean, there's also sharpening in post. I mean, if you're shooting raw and you have sharpening turned down to 0, you know, I mean, sharpening is part of the gig when you're post-processing. So that could be part of it. So, yeah. I mean, if you want to give us some more information, Travis, we could dig into that more.
But, yeah, write in podcast@ontakingpictures.com, Travis.
Paul Crichton? Is that how we decided?
Paul Crichton, yeah.
If a photographer had 48 hours to spend in New York City, how would you recommend it be spent?
This is you.
I am not. I could give you restaurants to go to,
Manhattan.
But I'm not a huge restaurants person. Yeah, I would. I would say don't miss Central Park. Don't miss the Met.
Washington Square.
Don't miss Times Square. Don't miss Washington Square Park. Walk around the West Village. Walk around the Lower East Side a little bit. You take the Staten Island ferry because it's free and it's a little boat tour. You can go, you know, over to Staten Island and back. It's kind of nice. If it's the summertime, go to Governor's Island.
Where's that carousel? Is that over in Dumbo?
God, there's a carousel over in
Dumbo. The one right by the bridge?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's Carousel Lumber Dumbo. Yeah, the Brooklyn Bridge Park, walk over the Brooklyn Bridge. That's a nice thing to do. You know, MoMA. I mean, if you're an art person, God, I mean, there's 20 different museums you shouldn't miss because they're world class. You know, the Frick, Whitney. You know, a lot of people would list all kinds of things. Some people would say go see a Broadway show. You know, there are a billion restaurants. I like eating food that tastes good, but I'm not a foodie, so ask somebody else. But I have my favorites. I think that would probably cover you for 48 hours.
It goes quick. Yep. 48 hours goes very quickly.
Yep. Next.
Andy Alfaro. AB. First question. When you guys are selling prints, are you shipping them flat or rolled?
Rolled.
Yeah. Flat, 8x10, anything above 8x10, rolled. B, have you ever considered having frequent guests on your show? Curator, photographer, filmmaker, not to be interviewed, but as a third voice in the conversation.
Why?
I mean, we've talked about it.
We've come this far.
Yeah, it's just, I think it would, at this point, it would really change the dynamic, and the show's long enough.
Yep. NC?
Oh, C. Oh, I thought you meant NC, like C, S, E,
and C.
Okay. Yeah. Letter C. What is the best way to describe one's work without the words becoming too bloated? Be honest.
Yeah.
Be honest.
I go down to bare minimum. What do you do?
Yeah.
I'm a portrait photographer. I don't go any fancier. Don't go any, you know, like.
Well, I try and document the struggle between man's id and his ego.
Yeah, exactly. Don't, ugh. Man, we were at MoMA the other day, and my friend Jeff Love and I were talking about. He was talking about the language used in the labels and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, on our show we call it art school pretense, you know. But yeah, it's good stuff. All right, is that all of them?
That's it.
Hour and 36 minutes. That's not bad. It's an hour
all right,
and a half.
So, hour and a half. All right. So on to the group.
Yep.
To the group. To the group. To the group. 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 The assignment was, what was it?
The assignment, hold on a second.
Why won't it let me in? It won't let me in now.
Cliche. Remember, it was Chris Connor's idea. Actually, some of these are really nice. Look at Todd Schicks. That's a nice picture.
All right, here we go. Sorry, now it wouldn't let me in for a second.
Todd Schicks' picture is lovely. Mitch Sevier's like... picture is lovely of the sunset.
Yep, sunset picture. Todd Schick. Are you talking about the hotel, the buildings?
Yeah. That's really nice. Light coming between.
Justice, love the ubiquitous mattress and sofa.
Yeah.
Combo on the side of the road there.
Michelle Walker's picture of her feet. That's classic.
Yep.
Justice Pang's sexy I like those shoes, bathroom Michelle. Mirror shots.
Yeah, I saw those.
Yeah. Oh, it's good stuff.
Insane. Matthew Zhu, little tilt shift there.
Yeah.
Love that.
Bobby Tingle with the cliche selfie in the mirror. Yep.
Jens Rode posting a picture of the In-N-Out burger.
Oh,
love that.
God.
Worth going to California for In-N-Out burger.
I know. I miss it. I may have to go out there. Johan put up a nice picture of the cows up in the mountains. Wow, that's beautiful.
Is that really cliche?
Is that really where he lives?
If that's cliche, I got to go there. That's a great shot.
The Australian Alps. Look at that. My God.
Austrian.
I'm sorry.
Australian
I did that
Alps.
The other day too, didn't I? Yes, the Austrian Alps. Why did I? Oh, I said something. Somebody was Australian when it was Austrian. I must have a crossed wires in my brain.
Andrew Shields.
Ocean City, New Jersey. Yeah. It's nice.
Andrew, were you just up at Eastern Market? Were you? Didn't he post some Eastern Market picture? Was that the Eastern Market in D.C. or somewhere else?
Good question.
Get back to me, Andrew. Are you here? Are you local? Some good found art. Bowdoin, nice through the windows there.
God, some guy put up some picture of a spider web or something.
Spider web, yeah, right. Yeah. That's outside on the porch.
I like Mike Waller's picture, very lightery. Salt
yeah,
lighter.
Through the yeah. drops on the window.
Although I'd shift the colors a little bit if I was going full on salt lighter.
I like Bobby Ellis's picture, the found art from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
street
I like
performer.
The guy.
Isn't that nice?
All right, what do
He's
you got
tax
for,
sharp.
What do you got for next week?
Daily life.
Daily life. I like that.
Daily life. What do you think of that?
I'm down with daily life. And OPP.
Right. And OPP. Okay, we're gonna get through this. Photographer of the week. We just lost another photographer, Mark Ribou. Photographer, born 1923, died 2016. A terrific photographer. I will be honest. I didn't know a lot about him. I knew a few photos. The girl with the flower and the guns. I knew that one. I knew some of his street work, just a wonderful, wonderful body of work from all over the world.
Yeah, look at that. Look
and,
at that. Great New York, yeah. New York Times. Yeah, that's classic, right? The girl with the flower and the thing.
Yeah, it's really nice work.
Man, we're talking a lot about photojournalists lately. It's interesting to think about photojournalists from, say, the 1950s, 1960s, and today, how we see them today, and if people who are shooting today will be seen that way 50 years from now, or if the world will change in such a way that photojournalism doesn't have the same sort of singular genius person is whether that's the issue or not, you know?
Right, right, right.
Whether what's his name? Who's the guy from the Times? Conrad?
Cunningham. Bill Cunningham.
No. Last name, Conrad. Who does the portraits for them.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm spacing out right now.
That guy.
But I know who you're talking about.
That guy or the younger guy who the Heisler, the, you know what I'm talking about? The younger, anyway, the point is these guys whose work we love, whose names we apparently can't think of at 11, you know, 9:46 at night, Todd Heisler, right? Isn't that the guy's name?
Yes.
Whether these guys will be looked at in the same way that we look at all of the giants that we talk about all the time, all like these.
I mean, is it the times that that they captured? Is it the way that they captured those times? And I don't know that you can separate those two.
No, I think it's difficult. And I think that's part of what, you know, or will something else be important because of the way that people.
And maybe it's the longevity of the career. I mean, Ribou, 60 years.
Right, exactly. And and how much changed over that time, right?
Right, in that 60-year period.
Yeah, but I mean, the same thing could be said from 1990 to 2040. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe
a monumental amount of stuff is going to change. And I think it's interesting.
I wonder if the things that changed then.
God, I love the guy painting on the scaffolding. That's so amazing.
Isn't that great?
Building the building.
Were they so monumental, these changes? I mean, the documentation of the civil rights movement I don't know. I mean,
same could be said of the gay rights movement and gay marriage or, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
or,
I guess
or,
so. Maybe.
Or the technological revolution of people going... cars disappearing because people are going to be using automated things or, you know what I mean? Who knows what's going to happen over the next 40, 50 years.
Yeah. So Ribou was a protege of Cartier-Bresson.
Yeah. That picture of Julia Childs is amazing where she's laughing.
Isn't that great? Yeah. Isn't that great? 93 years old. So, sadly, died of Alzheimer's, but 93 is a pretty good clip.
Yeah, if you got to go, 93 is not a bad year, not a bad age to do it.
Look at this. In 19, according to the New York Times article, in 1955, he drove a specially equipped Land Rover to Calcutta from Paris, staying for a year in India. He was also one of the first Westerners to photograph in communist China, and he spent 3 months in the Soviet Union in 1960. Think about that.
Yeah.
1960.
Yeah, that is going deep.
Yeah.
So balls on these guys.
Yeah. Mark Ribou, photographer of the week. Check out his stuff. There are also a few, I added a few YouTube videos.
Yep. Some. Put them in the show notes.
So interesting stuff.
I think they're great.
Yeah. All right. So what if people want to yell at us for giving them bogus information, what do they do?
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com or Jeffrey Sidoris at gmail.com.
No, it's, right. Thanks.
Yeah. 323.
Right.
Yeah, if you want to get back.
What's our number? 347-687-9411. Bill's on the Twitters and the Instagram at Bill Wadman. I'm at Jeffrey Sidoris.
Indeed.
And hey, good luck on the shoot next week, man.
Thank you.
I can't wait. I know you can't talk about it even offline. I will tell you, even offline, Bill has refused to talk about it. So you know it's not that exciting. There's something there.
But, I'll let you guys. I'll tell stories about it when it's over.
Good.
And we got a big show next week. Docu-America. We're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what you see in art, what 50 people told us when you asked, what do you see in that art? That's interesting.
Yeah. What do you see in there? I'm curious to see what people think about that.
Yeah. We'll talk about my experiences with that Pentax and we'll talk about some other stuff.
You know, maybe we could do our own kind of experiment to this. If we can pick, you know, let's pick 10 or 20 pieces of art and put them up in the group and ask people to comment on them. What do you see here?
I say three pieces of art and people comment.
Yeah, three? All right, fine.
I think we could go a little smaller. But yeah, sure. What do you think about spelling photo, F-O-T-O, as in photo map?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Fro.
God, look at the little photo map booth. Oh, that's so funny. Looking at the little shots of them. Wow, that's some wide spacing of letters right there.
Right.
Photo.
All right, let these people go.
All right, let my people go. All right, see you next week, Jeffrey.
All right, have a good week, everyone.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something. This way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long, it's clear to me the this way, say what you wanna say, I know what you will say, will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud, everything we tried to